I don't know how that worked, but you two were
Yeah, it worked on my end. It worked on my end.
Cool. I was.
It wasn't entirely in sync, but, you know, we got a little Justin, a little Jason. Quack, quack.
Are we going to end it with bye, bye, bye joke?
Well, somebody could. I'm not.
Okay, cool. Just ask.
Greetings again, curious crowd. It's been a while since you've heard from us. Has it been a month? Or more? It's been 2 months, maybe. Yeah.
It's going to be 2 months. Well, I mean, we had our live podcast. So
you may have been listening to our old stuff, but it's been a while since we've released new material. But in case you guys forgot, we did mention that we were going to be going to a monthly edition of It's on the List, just because we have a lot going on and the world is not what it used to be. So we can't really take this particular podcast to where we initially wanted it to go. But we also don't want to leave you guys hanging because we have quite a bit of listeners. So we're still, you know, enjoying talking about certain things because we're still checking stuff off of our lists. So we might as well share the wealth with you guys if you think it's wealth. We think it is, but whatever. I am joined today by the lovely Rachel.
Hello. I don't know why I'm waving. You can't see me. Speaking of Twitch, we are live streaming now. So
come follow.
Check us out.
Subscription or death. The beautiful Jams.
Hello. I'm waving too.
It's a hard habit to break once you're like really into it.
Well, I mean, we've been doing it for a while now, so it's kind of it's part of the routine, I suppose. So we are recording on Galentine's Day. This will not be posting for a while, but I do want to say happy Galentine's because I'm here with the gals. Cheers to you with my imaginary drink. And appropriately, we are also going to be talking about The Queen's Gambit, which features quite the gal. It all just kind of worked out to fall on the day. Again, y'all will not be hearing this on Galentine's Day. It'll be a couple weeks, but it's okay. Y'all can get the reference. This was recorded a couple weeks ago. So I hope everyone had a lovely Valentine's Day if you are coupled. May you have gotten the laid wishes that Rach wished upon you, a while ago. I love how you're still using your hands. People can't see you.
You can use your imagination, everybody.
Anyway. All right. So, Jams and I watched The Queen's Gambit pretty close to its original release, Jams?
Yeah.
On the Netflix, and we knew we wanted to discuss it because it was, we found it interesting, just the way it was filmed, not only visually, but just the kind of, like, the treatment of the character herself, well, characters, really. Anya Taylor-Joy is a force, clearly. We've known this for a while, but I think this really kind of clinched it. So we started bugging Rach that we thought that she would enjoy it and that she should watch it. Now, Rach, how long did it take you to get into it?
I think I started and stopped at least 5 or 6 times before I actually sat down and watched all 7 episodes, just straight through.
And what do you think is, like, the main thing that kind of stemmed that start-stop thing?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it was a combination of the fact that I had just finished a series on Netflix that dealt with a lot of trauma, and the first two episodes of this, of The Queen's Gambit, felt very much like, oh, we're dealing with another trauma grief situation, and I don't think mentally I just wanted to do that to myself. And also, oh my gosh, I had something else and I can't remember what I had to say.
Cricket sounds.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I had it like 2 seconds ago.
Being in the mood. Too slow.
No, it wasn't the pacing. I thought the pacing was fine. Oh my gosh, I had it like on the tip of my brain like 2 seconds ago before I even started talking.
That's okay.
And now I can't think of it. And it was important. Wait, too.
If you think of it, just pause me and we can leave some dead space so that Jams can pick it up and put it in. If you think of it. Just flail your arms wildly.
Okay.
Okay. So, just in case anyone hasn't watched it, we'll just do a little recap on Queen's Gambit, courtesy of the wiki, because it's easily accessible and I'm lazy. So, The Queen's Gambit is a 2020 American coming-of-age period drama miniseries based on Walter Tevis's 1983 novel of the same name. Let's see. It was written and directed by Scott Frank, created it with Alan Scott. They did do really heavy collaboration with Anya Taylor-Joy. I do know that. If you guys haven't watched, they did like a little brief making of on Netflix. It's like a short 20-minute behind-the-scenes type feature on how they did certain aspects of the show, which I thought was really, really interesting. So if you did enjoy the series, I highly recommend watching that, taking a little bit of time watching that. Anya did have a lot of input on her character design in particular, just like all the aesthetics and how she evolved from the younger Beth to the more established, confident Beth that we see closer to the end of the show. Beginning in the mid-1950s and proceeding into the 1960s, the story follows the life of Beth Harmon, an orphan chess prodigy on her rise to the top of the chess world while struggling with drug and alcohol dependency. So Netflix released The Queen's Gambit on October 23rd, 2020, and after 4 weeks, it had become Netflix's most watched scripted miniseries and has been acclaimed by various critics. Anya has been lauded, and cinematography, production values, basically all the stuff that I think Jams and I really kind of were attracted to, they got recognition for all of those things. They did garner 2 Golden Globe Award nominations, including Best Limited Series or Television Film, and Anya got quite a few nominations as well, so on and so forth. So,
I remember now. It was a combination of... the fact that the storyline was about a character that was going through trauma and grief, and the fact that everybody around me was hyping the show up so much to the point where I was expecting something more. And I feel like I've had this conversation with a couple of other people about the whole expectations versus, you know, going into a show cold without knowing much about it. And I feel like having people hype it up is almost a spoiler, in a way. Because you now have this expectation that it's gonna be really good. And it was good. It's just my expectations were so high. And I normally don't put expectations on the stuff that I watch. But everybody around me was like, this is good. And I feel like this is what other people have said to me after watching Bridgerton, because they caught it after the hype. They didn't catch it before the hype happened. And they were like, I don't understand why the hype is so big. It's a good show, but everybody said it was, like, so good that it kind of almost ruined it a little bit.
I can see that. For me. I can definitely see that. I think that happens a lot for, I'm not sure if it's universally, because I feel like people manage their expectations in different ways. I feel like some people take them a lot more seriously or are capable of having really, really high expectations. If you live a jaded life, your expectations aren't as high. You don't have that high expectation muscle anymore. But yeah, no, I've watched a number of shows where I have caught it after the fact, and they've been hyped up, and I either couldn't get into them, or I keep putting them off, and I just haven't watched them yet. and I still have a few on my list, actually, where people keep saying that I should watch them because they're absolutely excellent, and I have no doubt that they are. But yeah, I don't know. I can understand that, though.
Yeah.
For sure.
I usually walk into things with no expectations. Because I don't feel like... I think everyone has their own tastes. So what someone really, really likes, I might not, and vice mm-hmm. versa, and that's okay. But for some reason, that kind of just stuck in the back of my mind when I was watching it, that it's going to be really good. Which is weird, because I normally don't watch anything, movies, TV, whatever, with that lingering expectation right. in the back of my mind.
But after you were in, like, the right state of mind to watch it, and you sat through it, you did think it was good, but it didn't live up to the expectation that you had built up in your head. Did it meet it?
That's a hard answer. That's a hard question to answer, because I thought overall the show was really good. At the same time, I thought the finale was beautifully done. I feel like the first 6 episodes really set up the finale really well. And that kind of mirrors the whole idea of chess, where, like, the first little bit isn't all that exciting. It's the end that's super exciting. And so they kind of built that theme into the miniseries, and I thought they did that really, really well. And you can only notice that until you watch the final episode. And I feel like with shows like this, you kind of have to, I don't want to say get through the first bit, but kind of, like, digest it. And then from a whole picture point of view, I think they did a really good job.
Yeah.
If
no,
that
for
makes
sure,
sense.
That does make sense. Jams, what is it? How do you feel about the series as a whole? Like, what was it for you that, like, made you feel maybe it was, like, really different from everything else that was going on Netflix at the time? And, like, what made it stand out for you? Just the experience of watching.
I really loved seeing the visual representation of the chess matches that she would have on her ceiling. I thought that was very visually stunning to see how her mind worked, to see it displayed like that. And to have a show with a strong female lead is always a plus for me. And I'm one of those chess dorks, so it was kind of cool to see a show about chess.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a while since we've seen one, and we definitely haven't seen one, like, where the woman was, like, the main chess player. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
I think another reason why I was a little bit disappointed was that I got the opportunity to watch The Queen of Catway a couple years ago, and I think they did a better job about chess, because it wasn't necessarily technical in the same aspect, but they showed this kind of, like, beautiful, carefree almost side of chess as well. It was very crafted, and it was crafted in a different way, And I really liked that. And that kind of, like, was also stuck in the back of my mind. And I feel like that movie didn't get the props it deserved when it came out. And also, that was based on a true story, a real girl from Uganda, so...
Different feel.
So, I had Fiona's story in the back of my head, I guess. Maybe that's why it was really hard to get into the Queen's Gambit, maybe? I don't know. Again, I'm not entirely sure what it was exactly that made it so difficult for me to, like,
get into the series. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having the difficulty of getting into a series. I feel like there's nothing wrong with not fully enjoying something that a lot of people are enjoying. But I mean, clearly those are two very, very different ways of telling a story about chess. And obviously, granted, one is a true story, but, you know, not everyone is going to have the same experience. So I feel like it's cool that both of these pieces exist, showcasing different experiences of chess and also different time frames, because we're talking about, you know, the 50s, 60s, and also two very, very different women. So I think one thing that struck me while I was watching the series was, like, I felt like Beth was almost on the spectrum in the sense of, like, how she, the way that she connected and the way that she kind of compartmentalized her feelings. She wasn't, like, your typical girl. And I liked also just her gifts and the way that she related to other people was quite... And this is for lack of a better term, but she was kind of a man about it all. Like, it was kind of cool to just see her indifference to, like, your day-to-day stuff. And, like, she wasn't worried about the boys, and she couldn't really relate to any of, like, the girls around her, because she was just so focused on this passion that is basically her only lifeline to surviving in her existence, because it wasn't the best existence. And I honestly love the way she treated all of the boys, because she was just so fucking indifferent that it was just kind of like they were all kind of like over the moon for her and like piney. And like it had been a while since I'd seen a girl portrayed in that way, where we're constantly shown shows in movies where the woman's always pining. And she had, like, I don't know how many of those boys were, like, just, like, completely obsessed with her, and she was just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, she got what she needed from them, and she was ready to go on with what she was truly passionate about.
Right, but she wasn't, like, she wasn't a bitch about it necessarily. Like, obviously she had her dependency issues and her substance issues and all that jazz, but it was just kind of like, this is who I am, and if you're gonna, like, get wide-eyed and doe-eyed and suckered into this other idea, like, I'm sorry, but that's just not my priority. And I'm genuinely glad, like, I'm really glad. I wasn't sure where they were gonna take it, and obviously I'm not familiar with the book, so I wasn't familiar with the ending. But I wasn't sure where they were going to take it as far as, like, if they were actually going to give her, like, a normal happy ending where she was going to end up with one of these guys or not. And I'm really glad she didn't. I'm glad they just kind of, like Rach said, the ending was quite beautiful. The way it was just kind of, like, it was her. It's just her and the board. Like, that's, like... That's her main love, that's her main passion, and she was perfectly happy with that. She didn't feel like anything was necessarily missing once she got to the end of all things. I feel like she was just satisfied. She did what she wanted to do since the start of the series, and that was it. She was perfectly happy just doing her thing. We need a little bit more of that. I feel like I don't feel like we have enough stories like that where it's not about you know, a certain type of happily ever after. Like, I like the ones that are a little bit more, I don't know, be happy on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Happy Galentine's Day, guys.
Yeah, you're definitely right that this was probably one of the few series where I felt like the ending was truly satisfying, just because she found, like, kind of peace. And I feel like at the beginning you can tell that she really needed that. So she got her happy ending. This was the perfect ending for her.
Yeah. So I mean, talking about the series being visually stunning, and James touched on the visual representation of how she saw things in her mind, and us getting a chance to see that. James, what other pieces did you find, like, visually interesting about the show?
The clothes. I loved seeing the fashion change through the years. Yeah. The fashion, for sure.
Did you have a favorite look of Beth's?
Oh gosh, it's so hard. It is.
There's a lot of choices.
I think the mod styles were probably my favorite. Like, when her hair was just a little bit longer and she had, like, the panel dress. I like that look.
It's
very, very chic.
I love how, like, the way that they used her, like, her clothes, everything, all the looks. She changed her hair so much. Mm-hmm. So, like, that kind of made her more relatable to me, because I feel like there are like Jams, you change your hair a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, where you just feel like you need, like, a refresh, and, like, you, like, either cut it or you dye it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a lot of women that feel that need of, like, well, you need a change, you go for the hair. And I liked the way that they kind of showed her growth and, like, her exploration of trying to really find herself for being such a non-traditional woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine her, like, because she doesn't quite fit in to the grand scheme of things the way it was, particularly in the 50s and 60s, of her being, like, trying to find just the right costume that feels best on her skin. And so I think, like, my favorite look, as much as I liked all the transformations, I do love her as a redhead. I feel like the red really, really suits her. Her white coat at the end just felt, like, so pure. Because I feel like she just, again, it just goes with the ending. Because she fully found herself and fully embraced herself and reached the pinnacle. And she was just, like, purely her and in her element, which was just, it was beautiful to see. Plus, wasn't it, like, snowing and stuff at the end? I can't even remember because I watched it a while ago. But there seemed to be, like, a pristineness to everything that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Rach, were you like able to kind of dive into the visuals and stuff at all while you were watching it, or did, because you had so much going on while you were processing, did it kind of distract you a little bit?
No, I fell in love with the visuals. I feel like the cinematography in and of itself was really well done. Obviously the costumes are gorgeous. I find it really interesting that you said that that she's very, like, she's a non-traditional woman, but in the scene with Cleo, I think her name is, her lovely French friend, she talks about how much she loves fashion, and she talks about how much she loves dresses, and that, you know, she had an unrequited love. So it's like, despite some of her, like, you know, more, I don't want to say that it's, like, masculine or in any way, like, just being more of a dude about, like, her love life, she was still very much a girly girl. She loved dressing up. I remember the scene where she's being questioned by the press, and she makes that kind of like biting remark about being better because she didn't have an Adam's apple to worry about. Like, that was just, she had some zingers, and that moment I was like clapping. I'm like, yay. Because they were talking about the way she dressed and how like she was too commercial to be taken seriously, and I loved her response to that. I just loved everything about her confidence, because she wasn't very confident at the beginning, and like she grew into that, and like she believed in her skill. And I think a lot of people need to like kind of like learn that. And I feel like her outward appearance, as the miniseries progressed, kind of like reflected how she felt about herself on the inside. And when she was at her lowest, it was also reflected in the way she looked. So I think the fashion was just kind of a mirror to her character and her character growth. And they did that so beautifully. And I also want to say that they chose beautiful locations to shoot. It felt right for the 60s. Like, it just, everything about the show felt right for the time period. And that's, I think, really hard to do in an authentic way.
For sure. No, I like that callback, too, because I didn't remember that very brief conversation with her, her friend's friend. But I feel like it's really, really easy to focus on one particular aspect of a character or a person, or particularly a woman. Like, I feel like we're so used to honing in on, like, that one characteristic, or, like, trying to define a person with just one particular thing. But women in particular, we are quite complex, guys. We are quite multifaceted.
Yeah. And I like that they explore different facets of her. Because that generally doesn't happen often. That she can be into fashion and be a girly girl, but, like, also be really confident in herself and, you know, take on the boys in their arena. And also be a complete mess. Because, like, people are complicated. And I liked that they showed every facet. It just made her super interesting as a character.
Sure. I feel like the complexity that they were able to put forward in 7 episodes is quite impressive. And I feel like those are the kinds of things that is really difficult to communicate to someone when you're recommending a show, because this isn't a traditional show. I don't think, in the sense of just like, it's a thinking show. Like, you have to actually like dive into the details and enjoy those details. It's not something that you can just casually watch, because if you're just casually watching it, I don't think you're gonna enjoy it. I think you really kind of have to mull over the nuances and the subtleties, because I feel like it's really, really in there. So it's definitely one of those things, one of those harder shows to recommend. Like, I think you can tell somebody it's a great show, but it's really hard to explain it without spoiling it. And it's really, really hard to just be like, it's all in the details. 'Cause then everyone's going to be like, I think something else too, okay, let me ask the question first and then I'll dive into it. Was there anything in the show while you were watching it that took you out of it? Jams, you go first.
As much as I love the character of Benny, it's really hard for me not to see Thomas Brodie Sangster as the little boy from Love Actually, or as the voice actor.
Oh my god, I was just about to say that.
Ferb.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he was great in the role. Like, if it was anybody else, I think it would have been a little different. But seeing his little face, I'm like, oh, it's Sam.
It's really tough. I feel bad for him, because it's going to be a challenge to get away from that. Because that was, like, such a strong starting role. That is just, that's just always gonna, he's always gonna be that kid. Like, he's not gonna be able to fight that.
It's also difficult because Love Actually has become sort of like this cult Christmas film, and so you see his cute little face every single year, so it's like, it's so, I feel bad too.
Well, the issue too is like, it's still the same face with facial hair on it.
It's a little mustache.
So it's just kind of like, dude, I'm sorry, but obviously we're of a certain age, because there were people who obviously who are the same age as him or younger who were like, what, he's hot now? And I'm just like, no.
He's still a little boy.
Yes.
Yeah, he's always going to be that kid in our minds, so right. it's hard to kind of adjust the way we, like, see him.
But yeah, so it definitely, that took me out for a second. And also Harry Melling, obviously.
Yeah.
And the fact that Harry keeps, the older he gets, keeps looking more and more and more like his Doctor Who predecessor. I don't remember if it was like an uncle, like a great uncle. I don't remember what the lineage is, but he looks more and more like that doctor the older he gets. But in case you kids don't know who Harry Melling is, that's Harry Potter.
Dudley.
Dudley, thank you very much. My one blank for a second there. So yes, a lot of familiar faces on the show. That distracted me for a second, because I was like, wait a minute, isn't that... I think the most obvious was obviously Thomas as Benny. And again, he did a fabulous job as this character. I mean, we all knew he was a great actor. You could see it as a kid. You knew he was going to make it big, and he was going to keep working and everything. But kid, your face is exactly the same, yo. Like, it's tough. It's going to be tough for me. I do have to say that his chemistry with Anya was quite good, quite impressive as well.
Mm-hmm. I really did love the little scene where she like pushes his hair back. I thought that was really like tender and sweet and really well done.
It was for sure. I did like that whole dynamic, because I think that was like the one instance where she kind of pined a little bit. But it was also in the sense of kind of like, she was more like lusting after him than anything else. And then once everything was said and done, she was just kind of like, eh. But I think it was also just like, she, because I like after they had their intimate scene, which again, disturbed, she was like so in the moment, and he like immediately started talking about chess. Mm-hmm. This was just like, really?
I think in that moment also she realized she was always going to play second fiddle to chess. Yeah. But then there was that kind of switch when like they were talking on the phone and like he said that he missed her, and like you can tell that he like genuinely cared.
Well, I feel
about
like
her.
they're
and it might have been the first time he actually genuinely cared about
a woman. No, for sure. I do definitely think that's the case. And I think, like, she basically got a taste of her own medicine. Because I feel like every other guy that she had been with before, that was her. And so this is just karma being like, yo, girl. This is what it's like to be burned.
You can't be treating people that way.
Definitely not. But more power to her. I like that, Beth. Okay, so... Something else that I wanted to touch on was the amazing dynamics between women. Because I feel like those relationships were really, really, really key for Beth, which is her relationship with her adopted mom. And her relationship with...
You're talking about Jolene?
Sorry, I'm looking for the actress's name.
Jolene is probably one of my favorite characters in the show besides
Same.
besides Elizabeth.
Moses Ingram.
Thank you.
They need to cast her in more things. Mm-hmm. In all the things.
That's just foul.
Yeah, I had to actually write down one of the quotes she said because I just related to it so much. When they're in the car together and Jolene says, "You've been the best at what you do for so long. You don't even know what it's like for the rest of us." And, like, I felt that. Only because, like, when I was in engineering, when I was studying engineering in university, I felt like everybody else around me, like, knew that they wanted to be engineers, and I felt like the fish out of water that knew that I wasn't supposed to be there, but I didn't know what else I wanted to do.
That's tough.
So when she said that quote, I was like, yeah, I felt that.
I can see that. Yeah, I think Jolene had, I think as far as, like, being a friend is definitely up there and everything, but I feel like she was almost, like, also kind of motherly to her, like, at the start, because obviously she was brand new to the orphanage. Jolene was the one that kind of knew, you know, the ins and outs of how everything was going, gave her advice on certain things. And really watched out for her. And, I think it had to be her to kind of knock her back to reality once she hit rock bottom. Like, I don't think it could have been anybody else, at that point. But, she was an incredibly strong character. I wish we would have seen more of her, but I feel like she was just... She's that type of character that is confident from the start. Like, she was just very, very, like, already established within herself. She kind of knew. She was always really, really strong. And if she didn't, she gave that kind of impression anyway. Like, this, that front of, like, I mean, it is what it is. It may hurt me. You may have hurt my feelings or any number of things, but I'm not going to show you that happened. So I really, really, really liked that. But I liked the way that she just kind of showed up on Beth's door after so long and had this incredible impact on her after so many years. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see. But besides Jolene, also her mom... What were your first impressions when they adopted her and, like, brought her home? What did you think was gonna happen? Because I feel like there were certain things about that may have been like, oh, this could go a stereotypical way. Did you have any kind of thoughts like that when you first watched it, James?
I'm not sure what I was expecting. Like, I kind of thought either they could do it one of two ways, where she goes and they have this perfect life set up for her, or the complete opposite. They could be complete douchebags and abusive to her. But I like the way that they did it, to where... she developed that close relationship with her stepmother, but the father figure, because he was never really a father to her, the only father figure she really had was Mr. Scheibel. And so it didn't even seem like it was that big of a blow for her stepfather to walk out of her life, because she never really developed a relationship with him.
Right, did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop, where, like, they were just going to be horrible, horrible people. Especially when... like, when they were showing her room, and it was, like, this pink, frilly, like, flowery, girly girl bedroom. And I'm like, oh no, they're going to be terrible people, aren't they? But... I adored the relationship between Alma and Elizabeth. I feel like they both were looking for something to kind of just heal themselves, because they were in so much emotional pain and were lonely. And they both have, like, deep creative artist minds, and so I think they connected on that level. Alma had no idea what she was doing. She didn't know how to be a mom. But I feel like they bonded in the sense that they both went through so much grief. Alma losing her previous child, and Beth not having her parents. So I feel like they were like kind of like the other half that they were missing in their lives.
Her death was really sad too. Mm-hmm. Like that was just, I wasn't expecting that at all. That was just like so sudden. Like obviously we knew something was wrong.
That hit.
But it hit hard. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I was similar to where I just thought something's off because again how Rach mentioned that the show starts with all of this trauma. I thought that, like, absolutely worst case was, and also the her dad was at, well, the dude that showed up with Alma was acting really, really weird at the adoption. So I was just kind of like, all of the quiet faces and looks and stuff, that all that face acting that was happening, I was just like, I don't like it. This is setting up something that's going to be really, really, really horrible. And so I just had, like, this really, really weird feeling where, like, I was just like, worst case scenario here is, like, this girl has been through so much trauma and, like, he's gonna be, like, some sort of, like, fucking, like, sex offender, he's gonna, like, do something horrible or whatever. And then he was, like, gone. Mm-hmm. And so I was just kind of like, okay, well, this is different. I wasn't expecting where they took it, and I'm glad they took it where they took it. And I'm glad that the story is what it is, because I feel like it was really, really unexpected. Once Beth started doing her competitions and talking to Alma about it and telling her, like, this is how they were going to make money, I was actually wondering if Alma was going to, like, backstab her a little bit and, like, do, like, what we typically see when kids get into careers where they're making more money than their parents and their parents are managing them, where the parents end up stealing it. So I was just like, I had all of this stuff. I'm jaded, guys. I have issues. So I had, like, worst case scenarios in my brain of, like, every horrible thing that could possibly happen, and I got proven wrong, which was a joy for me. So I took it as just, like, you know, it was nice to have that hope of being able to, like, that not everyone is out to get you. Like, there are some genuinely good people who come into your life, and based off of whatever trauma or pain or need or whatever is going on, that two broken people can definitely help each other. One way or another. Maybe not in the most healthy ways. Because there were a lot of really not healthy ways of coping going on there. But still, they were each other's lifelines, and it was sad to see Alma go the way that she did. Although she did have some happy moments down in Mexico, were they? She did have some happy last moments with that dude that she was hanging out with. So props to Alma for getting hers.
Yeah, I also had that little moment where I thought that perhaps Alma might take advantage of Elizabeth's skill. But the second that Elizabeth was like, when Alma was like, can I get 10%? And Elizabeth said 15, I kind of knew that relationship was solid. And then that doubt was like gone at that moment. So I was like, yeah, Alma's good. I'm good with Alma. And then they had to take her away. So of course, right?
Yeah. And Jams mentioned Mr. Scheibel, which I think is another key figure in Beth's life, which kind of basically started it all. Mm-hmm. And I wish we would have gotten to see him see her get, like, the success that she did. But I think he passed away, right, if I remember correctly, because he was older.
Yep.
But that was another case where, like, when the communication started between them and stuff, I was just like, this, I'm not sure I like this. This can get dangerous real fast. But, you know, when we were talking about, like, a young girl, like, going down to the basement of a school and, like, chatting up the custodian, you're just kind of like, this isn't normal. Like, I'm trained to not like these things.
That's the day and age that we're living in.
I know. It's sad, isn't it? Like, it's sad. Like, I feel like this is, like, I don't know if it's just older millennials or what, but we're fucked, yo. Like, we just, like, it's, like, worst case. Like, stranger danger. This is just horrible. But anyway.
See, I never got that vibe from Scheibel.
Well, I mean, he was so stoic, though. Like, I couldn't read him, because he was just so, like, grumpy old man, leave me alone type, you know? And just, you just weren't sure if, it, like, at any moment something was going to trigger him, and just, like, rah! So, yeah, I don't know. But he ended up being a good dude, and he taught Beth all that she needed to know, and basically got her out the door. What do you guys think there were, like, out of all of the boys that were around her that she considered friends and that have some sort of influence, what was your favorite? Or who do you think had the most impact?
I feel like those are two very different questions.
You can answer wonderful.
My favorite interaction would have to be her friendship with the twins. I feel like that was a really lovely, just male-female platonic friendship that, like, they made fun of each other, they hung out together, they, like, you can tell that the boys really supported her. And I really thought that was lovely. Even though the interaction was very minimal, I thought the scenes that they were together felt genuinely just like a lovely friendship. And that was really sweet. And, like, they, like, showed up to, like, support her at some of her games. Like, I enjoyed their interaction and their conversations together.
I would think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with the twins. On the platonic front, I think I always hoped that she would end up with Towns, because you could tell that they had that connection from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy that they had that kind of unrequited love.
Yeah. Did you think one or, like, more of them had more of an impact on her than the others? Because we have Harry Belton, mm-hmm. Benny Watts. I mean, we can even talk about her competitors being kind of classified in that group. So, like, Vasily, Matt and Mike, they're there. Mm-hmm. Olson Wexler, who's Benny's friend. That was brief.
I liked, was his name Gregory? The young Russian boy that she played.
Yes.
I really liked that scene between the two of them, and she's asking, "Well, what are you going to do when you become world champion?" And he like short circuited and like just didn't know. He didn't plan past that, and I think that kind of made her think about her own chess career journey a little bit.
So that brought insight,
which
to her.
Is yeah, I think so. I think it kind of, like, made her take pause and, like, reevaluate a little bit. And it was, like, the youngest competitor that she played against, so that was the person that would kind of make her think a little bit.
I actually love that you say that, because that, again, I think really speaks strongly to just the subtleties that they interwove into the story, where it's just like even the smallest interaction can have a really big impact on you and your life, which obviously anyone living knows that that's true. So you know, don't discount any brief interaction because you just never know. Jams, what do you think about the boys? Do you think one influenced her more than the other?
Probably Benny, because he was the only one that was, like, kind of at, like, he understood the obsession and the strategy, and he really tested her mind and her skills and helped her to become stronger.
Yeah. I think...
Mm-hmm. I think also he, like, yeah. pushed her, because it's just... Especially since, like, he was just so good at speed chess in the beginning, and she did not know how to keep up. And I think that that really, like, forced her to kind of not sit on her laurels and be better and kind of just grow as a chess player, even though she was very talented in her own right.
They were... Again, I feel like the my favorite thing about the show is the psychology behind it all and just the character interactions that I find really, really, really interesting. Just the character studies and how they relate to each other. Because I feel like her and Benny are ridiculously similar. And her and Harry Beltic are, like, personality-wise ridiculously different. And he may be, like, her complete opposite because he was just so... sensitive, and, like, she gave it a shot. She was just like, you know, I'll give it a try. And she realized that it wasn't for her. but she definitely needed that tenderness at that time too, because she was just so rough around the edges at that point, because she basically, like, had hit rock bottom or was just about to hit rock bottom. I don't even remember the order of things, but Harry was there when she needed him to be, and obviously she hurt him, because that hurt his feelings of not being the one, and her being as rough as she is, but you know, life and stuff. But I agree with Jams. I think Benny was probably the most impactful. Although Towns, though.
They all had an impact on her. And I feel like when you have so many people out there kind of, like, they all kind of, like, were looking out for her in a sense, but, like, she had to accept their help. Like, that was, like, on her to kind of want to get out of the situation that she was in. Like, because, like, Harry tried, and he knew that she had to do it for herself, because otherwise he would have just stuck around. But, like, you can only help someone to a certain point before they have to kind of meet you halfway. And I feel like that was a stark contrast to how her mother handled things. And I kind of wish they did explore, because they did flirt with mental illness a lot with the show, especially with her mother, but they never really, like, explored it enough, I think. I feel like that felt, like, very much like a loose end, almost. But again, they only had 7 episodes, so it's really hard to, like, delve into every single nook and cranny about the human mind and how it works and what it makes us do. So I can understand the time limitation. And it was supposed to be Elizabeth's story.
That would have been interesting, though, but if they had explored more of that, though. I feel like if they would have had 3 more episodes, maybe they would have been able to, but something tells me they probably would have explored it and then were like, nah, This is going to take us down a rabbit hole that's not going to make sense to, like, everything else that we've got going on. But the amount of psychology that they did explore in 7 episodes is just, like...
It's astounding how much they packed into those episodes. It's
crazy. But anyway, is there anything else that really, really stands out? Or is there anything that you'd like to change about the series.
I will have to say, and I think they did a really good job with the aspect of being dependent on substances, on alcohol, on drugs. It was very, very difficult for me to watch someone go through that. I've been really lucky that I haven't seen it firsthand in person in my own life. But to see someone so brilliant kind of spiral like that was really, really hard to watch. I feel like you have to be in a particular frame of mind to watch this series. I feel like, especially right now with the pandemic and how emotionally fragile people are, that those scenes would be difficult to watch. Because you may be in that position.
Especially because she develops that addiction as a young child, and that's very hard to fathom.
Yeah, and it was...
Right.
Exactly. It wasn't, like, her fault. It was kind of just pushed on her, which makes it even more heartbreaking, in my opinion. Yeah, it was really hard to watch those scenes. Just when she's hitting rock bottom. Not to say that I don't think they should have changed anything about them, because I feel like that was a really important part of her story that needed to be told.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I wish they had had, if not one or two more episodes, to explore a little bit more of the characters. Like, I think I would have liked to have seen more of Jolene. I would not have minded a little bit more of a touch on her mom, her real mom. But again, I feel like the story that they stuck to, it all kind of made sense. It had been a really, really, really long time since I've watched a show with an ending that I thought was perfect. So, props to that, because endings are hard, guys. Endings are really, really difficult. I love a lot of series that the endings are just not good.
Yeah.
So...
This was my biggest issue with the show that I watched before leading into The Queen's Gambit, because the show itself, I'm not going to say what show it was, but I really, really liked the show, and I feel like they botched it in the last two episodes. It felt like it was a different show altogether. So... I think that also kind of played into why it took me a really long time to get into The Queen's Gambit, because I didn't want to invest into another series that potentially could disappoint me at the end. Luckily, it's a mini series and it's short, so the ending was very, very satisfying. I really, if we can talk about the ending really quick, I really love the whole. Full circle, all of her boys in her corner, and they do like this like Avengers type planning session for her to strategize to win her
really chess sweet. Game.
I thought that was very, very sweet. It felt almost cheesy, but it felt perfect in that moment, because she did have the conversation with Benny about how the Soviets played as a team. They didn't play individually. They strategized together, and the Americans were very much like individual players, and that's why they weren't as strong. And I thought that was a really nice, perfect bookend to that conversation.
She had her family.
It was incredibly unconventional, but it worked. It was the family that she needed. She got the family that she needed.
Super sweet. Well, If no one else has final thoughts, good mojo to the Queen's Gambit. There's like 5 million. I'm looking at the list right now. There's seriously, it's an endless amount of awards that they're nominated for, and it's still pending results. So, not only for the show, but also for Anya. So we'll see what happens there. But I really enjoyed the show. I do recommend people watch it. I do like Rachel's caveat of just being self-aware as to what your current state of mind is. And if you want something that's a little bit more thoughtful to watch and visually stunning and obviously female-led, strong woman and all that jazz, and very, very weird, nostalgic memories of some of the people that show up. then this is the show for you. if you want something light and fluffy, watch something else. That's pretty much what we can say. Any final thoughts, ladies? And we shall call it.
I have to say that Anya gave me very much Emma Stone vibes the entire way through, and I felt like they have a very similar way that they hold themselves when they act, and I feel like all I saw was like a very young Emma Stone, which was like lovely to see.
That's very interesting.
She also pulls a lot of expressions that are very much like Emma too. So
I have to.
I think she's going to be a massive, massive Hollywood star.
Yeah, I feel like she's definitely on her way to. She's done a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see the latest version of Emma, but she was also very good in that, I have to say. I'm looking forward to seeing her in more things.
I think the cat agrees.
That is the softest, cutest meow I have ever heard.
Dimitri. Yeah.
Is that like a spoiled meow? What's happening here?
It's a I want some love right now meow.
It is almost Valentine's Day, so makes sense.
Okay. So, nerds, there you have that. We will be back, obviously, next month. We have a list of things that we're chatting about. I cannot remember off the top of my head what that is at the moment. Rach is pulling out a piece of paper. Because she took all the notes. We have it on our calendar. We promise. We're organized. But I am not.
I'm really excited because our next episode will be crossing off something that I have seen so many times now, and it is
The
Fall.
Right. I have to watch that. It's been on my list since we started this fucking podcast, guys, and I still haven't seen it.
Which means we have to cross it off just, now.
It's ridiculous that I haven't watched it. I mean, it's freaking Lee Pace. I have no excuse. No excuse at all.
Yeah.
But
one word, oh. Guy liner.
No sleeves. I've seen the pictures.
Yeah.
And I still haven't seen it. So that's going to be next. Make sure you're following us all over the damn place. We're at Nerd Curious, but mostly on Twitter. And that will be our lovely Rachel who's managing that. So if there's anything that gets posted that you don't like on Twitter, just go fuck yourself.
That's not where I thought that thought was going, but I'll take it.
I mean,
we're also on Twitch, like we mentioned at the top. We stream every Monday and Thursday and the occasional Saturday at 5 p.m. Pacific.
Yes.
So if you want to chat with us about random things that are nerdy and question things that are happening in the fandom. Mm-hmm. Join us.
Subscription or death.
We can't promise a good time, but we can promise a weird time.
Truer words.
A good way. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's definitely a good way of putting it. We also have a newsletter, guys, where I kind of compile all of the Curious Bites from our Monday streams that we highly recommend you subscribe to, or Foxy will kill you. So if you don't know what that means, subscribe to Twitch. this, I feel like we should like put out like a weird like curse situation, like The Ring, where like if you don't subscribe to the Twitch channel, you're gonna have some weird ghosty fox situation happening where she just like pops out of your computer and like slashes at you or something. Sorry guys, tangent. Weird. Alright. There's that weird moment Rachel promised you. Alright. Yeah. Make sure you're subscribed to all the things. We do all the things all over the damn place. So just haunt us and we'll be seeing you. Per the usual. Stay safe. Stay sane. Don't be a dick. Per the usual. And yeah, just keep being awesome. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye, bye, bye.
Bye. You got the bye, bye, bye joke in, yay.